Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We're in the home stretch of this season two of Solving JFK. The goal for this season is to study the life of Lee Harvey Oswald to see what we can learn and apply to the bigger picture study of the JFK assassination. So far, we've covered Oswald's life from the time he was born until early October of 1963. In this episode, we pick up with Oswald back in Dallas. We'll examine the last 7 weeks of Oswald's life, including how he got the job at the Texas School Book Depository Building, the continued political activity of Oswald, and the state of the relationship between Lee and Marina on the day of the assassination.
In Dallas, Texas, 3 shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
I don't know what this is all about.
Dallas police this morning resumed custody. The man they have formally charged with the assassination of President Kennedy.
I'm just a patsy.
The man is Lee Oswald.
Was Oswald acting alone, or was he a member of a conspiracy? Commission answers, he acted alone.
This is Solving JFK. I'm your host, Matt Crumpton. As we discussed over the last few episodes about Mexico City, there are multiple credible reports of Oswald being in 2 places at the same time during the end of September and the first few days of October of 1963. Either Oswald was in Dallas at that time and was impersonated in Mexico City, or Oswald was in Mexico City, which would mean that Oswald was impersonated in Dallas. Either way, we know that Oswald was impersonated somewhere during this time. On October 3rd, a much clearer picture of Oswald's whereabouts and actions begins to emerge. On that day, Oswald went to the Texas Employment Commission to look for a job in Dallas. He was matched with an open position that needed his skill set, but he wasn't hired for it. This is because his former boss, Robert Stovall, from Jagger's Child Stovall, told the company that Oswald was, quote, kind of an oddball, peculiar, and maybe a damn communist. After being turned down for this job, Oswald stayed at the Dallas YMCA that night. The next day, Oswald called his wife Marina and asked her to get Ruth Payne to come and pick him up in Dallas and bring him back to her house in Irving so that he could be with his pregnant wife and 2-year-old daughter. But Ruth wasn't able to help because she was in the hospital giving blood just in case it was needed for the delivery of Marina's baby that was due any day now. So instead, Oswald hitchhiked the 15 miles or so to get to Irving. Ruth Payne said that he told her he was in Houston looking for work, but that he had been in Dallas for a few days before coming to her house. The unemployed Oswald stayed at the Payne residence from October 4th through October 6th. On Monday, October 7th, Oswald rented a room at a boarding house from Mary Bledsoe at 621 Marsalis Avenue. But he wasn't there very long. Bledsoe kicked him out of the boarding house only 1 week later because, as she told the Warren Commission, she didn't like that Oswald spoke in Russian on the phone to his wife and, quote, I didn't like him. I didn't like his attitude. He was just kind of like this, you know, just big shot, you know? And I didn't have anything to say to him, and I didn't like him. Just didn't want him around me. On October 14th, the day he was kicked out of the boarding house on Marsalis, Oswald interviewed for another job, this time at the Wiener Lumber Company in Dallas. The interviewer at the lumber company said Oswald, quote, makes an excellent appearance and seems quite intelligent. But Oswald refused to provide proof to the lumber company of his honorable discharge from the Marines, which was a red flag. This resulted in Oswald not getting the job. Of course, we know that Oswald did not have an honorable discharge from the Marines, so it makes sense that he wasn't able to provide this document. After being rejected by the lumber company and kicked out of the Marsalis boarding house, Oswald went back to the rooming house at 1026 North Beckley Avenue and spoke to the owner, Gladys Johnson, about renting a room. Johnson remembered Oswald from when he had visited about 3 weeks earlier, around the time when the Warren Report says he was in Mexico. He used the name O.H. Lee at the rooming house and did not tell Mrs. Johnson his real name. According to the property manager at 1026 North Beckley, Earlene Roberts, Oswald never went out at night and never had any visitors. On the same day that Oswald was turned down for a job at the lumber company, his wife Marina was talking with Ruth Payne and her neighbors, Dorothy Roberts and Lenny Mae Randall. These four mothers of young children were discussing Lee's difficulty in finding a job. At some point during this conversation, the women began to brainstorm places where Oswald could potentially find work. They mentioned a few businesses, according to Lenny Mae Randall, Manor Bakeries and Texas Gypsum. Then Lenny Mae Randall reminded the group that her younger brother, Buell Wesley Frazier, had recently been looking for work and was just hired at the Texas Schoolbook Depository Building. Randall said that it was busy season at the depository, but she didn't say anything about there being a job opening there. Randall told the Warren Commission, quote, I didn't know there was a job open at the Texas Schoolbook Depository. Wesley had just looked for a job, and I had helped him to try to find one. We listed several places that he might go to look for work. Randall then said, quote, Mrs. Payne asked me if I would call the Texas Schoolbook Depository and see if there was a job available, and I told her no, that I didn't know anybody over there, and if she wanted to call over to the place, she would have to do it because I didn't know if there were any job openings over there. After speaking to Randall, Ruth Payne then took it upon herself to look up the number for the Texas Schoolbook Depository and gave them a call. Payne didn't call any of the other potential employers that were discussed by the group, only the depository. According to Payne, she spoke with Supervisor Roy Truly and said, quote, You don't know who I am, but I have a neighbor whose brother works for you. He tells his sister that you are very busy, and I am just wondering if you can use another man. I have a fine young man living here with his wife and baby, and his wife is expecting another baby in a few days, and he needs work desperately. When Marina spoke with Lee at his rooming house that night, Ruth Payne got on the phone with him and told him to go to the Schoolbook Depository Building as soon as possible to get the job. On the next day, October 15th, Oswald met with Roy Truly at the Schoolbook Depository. Truly hired Oswald on the spot with the idea that he would only work for a brief time during busy season. Truly said that he hired Oswald because he was a former Marine and because he said yes, sir. Unbeknownst to Oswald, on the same day that he interviewed for the Schoolbook Depository job, a man named Robert Adams from the Texas Employment Commission called the Payne home with a message for Lee Oswald about a higher-paying job at a different employer. Adams was following up on the visits that Oswald had made to the Employment Commission in the weeks before. The job that Adams was calling about was a position as a cargo handler for Trans-Texas Airlines. It would have been a full-time permanent position, unlike the temporary seasonal one at the school book depository, and it would have paid Oswald 30% more per month than his job at the depository. But Oswald wasn't at the Payne home when Robert Adams called. Adams said in his affidavit to the Warren Commission that he spoke to someone at the Payne residence and was told that Oswald had taken another job. When asked about this phone call, Ruth Payne first denied knowing anything about it. Then she said that she remembered that Oswald told her about it. But Adams only called the Payne residence. He never informed Oswald personally of this opportunity in any other medium of communication. So it's not possible that Ruth Payne could have heard about the Trans-Texas Airlines job from Oswald. Given how eager Ruth Payne was to help Oswald get the job at the Texas School Book Depository building, it's surprising that she didn't at least pass on the message to Oswald about a job that paid 30% more and wasn't just a seasonal gig. This is especially the case because we know that Oswald wasn't happy with the depository job. Marina testified that Lee was looking through the newspapers for something better. The notion that Oswald was offered this better job and didn't take it also confused Warren Commission staff attorneys William Coleman and David Slauson. They wrote a memo noting that because Oswald turned down a permanent job that paid $310 per month when he was only making $209 per month in his seasonal job, the commission had to consider the possibility that, quote, Oswald may have had a non-economic reason for taking the job at the Texas School Book Depository building.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Lee Harvey Oswald's first full day of work at the Texas School Book Depository building was on October 16, 1963, about 5 weeks before President Kennedy was assassinated. Oswald worked from 8 a.m. until 4:45 p.m. each day, with a lunch break from noon until 12:45. His supervisor, Roy Truly, said that Oswald's work was above average and that he did not miss any days of work during his time at the depository. On Friday, October 18th, Oswald asked Buell Wesley Frazier for a ride from the depository back to the Payne house in Irving for the first time. The Paynes then threw a surprise birthday party for Lee on his 24th birthday. They celebrated with wine and a birthday cake. 2 days later, Marina gave birth to her second child, Audrey Marina Rachel Oswald. According to Michael Payne, 3 days after Rachel Oswald was born, Lee Oswald attended a right-wing political rally featuring General Edwin Walker, the same man the Warren Report says that Oswald fired a shot at in April. This rally, labeled United States Day, was a way to undercut the United Nations Day event that was led by Adlai Stevenson that was planned for the next day in Dallas. Stevenson had run against Dwight Eisenhower for president in 1952 and 1956. The Stevenson rally on October 24th was protested by right-wing demonstrators, which got a little out of hand and led to Stevenson being struck by a placard. Michael Payne, who claimed to be a political leftist, told the Warren Commission that he attended a right-wing John Birch Society meeting on the same night that Oswald was at the right-wing United States Day rally. Payne told the commission, quote, "I have been to a number of rightist meetings and seminars in Texas." Payne said about Oswald, quote, "I gathered that he was doing more or less the same thing. I didn't inquire how he spent his free time, but I supposed he was going around to right-wing groups, familiarizing himself for whatever his purposes were, as I was." On Friday, October 25th, Oswald once again hitched a ride with Buell Wesley Frazier from the School Book Depository to the Payne's house in Irving. This was the first time that Lee had a chance to see Marina and his new baby Rachel after they had left the hospital. Soon after meeting his newborn daughter, Lee left the house with Michael Payne to drive 35 minutes away to an ACLU meeting. During that meeting, Lee told the ACLU that he had been to the right-wing rally and shared how members of the John Birch Society had said anti-Semitic and anti-Catholic statements. Shortly after the ACLU meeting, Oswald wrote a letter to the Communist Party newspaper, The Worker. Oswald mentioned how he had attended the ACLU meeting on October 25th and asked, quote, "Could you advise me as to the general view we have on the American Civil Liberties Union, and to what degree, if any, I should attempt to heighten its progressive tendencies? Some of those present showed marked class awareness and insight." This letter was postmarked November 1st, 1963, but it didn't arrive at the Communist Party headquarters in New York until November 29th. The head of the American Communist Party, Arnold Johnson, read the letter when it arrived and told the Warren Commission that there was, quote, "something odd about the whole letter. You have a different kind of ink in two places here." Based on the United States Day rally, the John Birch Society meeting, and the ACLU meetings that Oswald attended, it looks like he remained outwardly politically active once he made his way to Dallas. On November 1st, Oswald registered a new P.O. box in Dallas, number 6225. He listed Fair Play for Cuba and the ACLU as the organization name on the P.O. box. This is yet another indication that Oswald's work with leftist groups may have been continuing in Dallas. He had previously listed the Payne home as his forwarding address, but this time, Oswald gave a fake address for the P.O. box, 3610 North Beckley Avenue. Incidentally, 6 days later, on November 7th, Jack Ruby rented P.O. box number 5475 at the same post office, only 12 feet away from Oswald's P.O. box. The FBI, despite releasing the flash on Oswald, continued to monitor and check in on him and Marina. On November 5th, while Lee was working at the School Book Depository, FBI agents James Hostey and Gary Wilson interviewed Ruth Payne at her home. She told the agents that she didn't know Oswald's address, but he had been at her home the previous weekend. On November 8th, Oswald allegedly wrote a handwritten letter to a Mr. Hunt. This letter, which was apparently in Oswald's handwriting, was on a scrap of paper that was consistent with other paper that Oswald used in Dallas. The letter said, quote, "Dear Mr. Hunt, I would like information concerning my position. I am asking only for information. I am suggesting that we discuss the matters fully before any steps are taken by me or anyone else. Thank you, Lee Harvey Oswald." The provenance of this letter is somewhat mysterious. Texas newspaper publisher Penn Jones obtained this letter through the mail from an unidentified person in Mexico City. That person told Jones that they had provided a copy of the same letter to the FBI in 1974. In April of 1977, three handwriting experts told the New York Times that the letter was consistent with Oswald's handwriting. Assuming this note is authentic, there is much debate about the identity of Mr. Hunt. The two prime suspects are career CIA official and Watergate burglar E. Howard Hunt and Texas oil baron H.L. Hunt. If Oswald did send this cryptic letter to either of them, it would potentially implicate him in a possible conspiracy. But the letter is also so vague that it's not helpful in solving the case without more context. On November 13th, Oswald visited the Dallas FBI office and left a note for James Hostey, apparently as a follow-up from the FBI's November 5th visit to Ruth Payne's house. According to Hostey, the note said, quote, "If I did not stop talking to his wife, he would take action against the FBI." Hostey says that he flushed Oswald's note down the toilet on the order of his boss, Gordon Shanklin, the special agent in charge of the Dallas FBI. Despite what Hostey said, Agent Shanklin denied any knowledge of this note and says that he never ordered it to be destroyed. On November 17th, the Sunday before the assassination, Marina asked Ruth Payne to call Oswald's rooming house and get him on the phone. Payne called the number for 1026 North Beckley and asked for Lee Oswald, but she was told that there was no one there with that name. This was because Oswald was registered under the alias O.H. Lee. The next day, Lee called Marina and admonished her for using his real name. He said that he was using a false name to stop the FBI from costing him jobs. When Lee tried to call Marina the next day, she hung up on him. On Monday, November 18th through Thursday, November 21st, Oswald took the bus from Oak Cliff, where his rooming house was, to his job at the school book depository, just like he had done for the last month. But on that Thursday, Lee asked Buell Wesley Frazier for a ride back to Irving, which was a change in the normal pattern of Oswald getting a ride from Frazier only on Fridays. Marina told the Warren Commission that the reason Lee came to the Payne house on Thursday instead of the normal Friday visit was that he was lonely and he wanted to make peace with Marina from their argument about Lee using an alias at his rooming house. Marina said that on the night before the assassination, Lee asked her to live with him and wanted them to get an apartment together in Dallas, but Marina wanted to stay at the Payne home through the holidays so that the Oswalds could save money. Specifically, she said she needed Lee to buy a washing machine now that they had two kids. Marina then gave Lee silent treatment for the rest of the night. Marina says that Lee watched TV that night and then went to bed around 9 o'clock. She says that she went to bed around 11:30. Ruth Payne told the Warren Commission that she thought Lee was in the garage that night because she said a light had been left on. But Payne also told the commission that most of the Oswalds' belongings were in the garage and, quote, "It was not at all remarkable that he went to the garage." Aside from the light being left on, according to Payne, there was no other reason for her to suspect that Oswald was in the garage that night. Warren Report defenders argue that Payne's recollection of a light being left on in the garage establishes that Lee was in the garage preparing his rifle for the next day. But looking at the record, this appears to be speculation based solely on the light being left on. On November 22, 1963, the morning of the assassination, Lee said goodbye to Marina and left for work with Buell Wesley Frazier. He told Marina that he did not plan to come back to the Payne home that night because he had just been there the night before, but he did say that he would be back for the weekend. Lee left a total of $170 in a wallet for Marina. This is the equivalent of about $1,700 today. Lee told Marina to buy some shoes for herself and to buy anything that the children needed. The fact of Oswald leaving this money for Marina is often cited as evidence that he knew he was about to kill President Kennedy and was trying to take care of his family in advance. But according to Marina, Lee always left a black wallet in the wardrobe that had money in it. She said that his regular practice was for him to, quote, keep the amount that he needed and put the rest in the wallet. So it's not really accurate to say that Lee suddenly decided that morning to leave extra money for Marina and the kids. According to Marina, the reality was that this wallet effectively functioned as the couple's bank. It's where Lee kept all of his extra money. On the other hand, Lee also left his wedding ring at the Payne home that morning. While Lee would sometimes remove the ring at work due to it being in the way of him doing his job, Marina said that this was the only time she ever saw him leave the ring at home during their marriage. Next time on Solving JFK, we once again turn our attention to Ruth and Michael Payne and analyze their actions related to the Oswalds. Then, we look at several reports of alleged foreknowledge of the assassination. Is there any evidence that someone knew the assassination was going to happen in advance? If you heard anything that you believe is out of context, or if you have additional information to offer, you can let us know at solvingjfkpodcast@gmail.com. Please provide citations to the record for any fact that you're relying on. For transcripts, sources, and official podcast merchandise, visit solvingjfkpodcast.com.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Thanks for listening. Visit solvingjfkpodcast.com for more information.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.